Royce and Arista carried the gear across the street to the little whitewashed shop with a signboard portraying a loaf of bread. Inside, a huge brick oven and a large wooden table dominated the space. The comforting scent of bread and wood smoke filled the air, and Arista was surprised the bakery wasn't broiling. The wattle and daub walls and the good-sized windows managed to keep the room comfortable. As Arista and Royce entered, they were introduced to Dunstan's wife, Arbor, and a host of other people whose names Arista could not keep up with. Once word spread, freemen, farmers, and other merchants dropped by, grabbing a pint and helping themselves to a hunk of dark bread. There were Alger, the woodworker, Harbert, the tailor, and Harbert's wife, Hester. Hadrian introduced Wilfred, the carter, and explained how he used to rent Wilfred's little wagon 4 times every year to travel to Ratibor to buy iron ingots for his father's smithy. There were plenty of stories of the skinny kid with pimples who used to swing a hammer beside his father. Most remembered Danbury with kindness, and there were many toasts to his good name. Just as the bailiff had predicted, it started to rain, and soon the villains, released from work due to weather, dropped by to join the gathering. They slipped in, quietly shaking off the wetness. Each got a bit of bread, a pint to drink, and a spot to sit on the floor. Some brought steaming crocks of vegetable pottage, cheese, and cabbage for everyone to share. Even Osgar, the Reeve, pressed himself inside and was welcomed to share the community meal. The sky darkened, the wind whipped up, and Dunstan finally closed the shutters as the rain poured. They all wanted to know what had happened to Hadrian, where he had gone, and what he had done. Most of them had spent their whole lives in Hintendar, barely crossing the river. In the case of the villains, they were bound to the land and by law could not leave. For them, generations passed without their ever setting foot beyond the valley. Hadrian kept them entertained with stories of his travels. Arista was curious to hear tales of the adventures he and Royce had shared over the years, but none of those came out. Instead, he told harmless stories of distant lands. Everyone was spellbound by stories about the Far East, where the Kalayan people supposedly interbred with the Ba-Ran gazelle to produce the half-goblin Tenkin. Children gathered close to the skirts of their mothers when he spoke about the Oberdaza, Tenkin who worshipped the dark god Uberlin and had blended Kalayan traditions with gazelle magic. Even Arista was captivated by his stories of far-off Dagestan. With Hadrian the center of attention, few took notice of Arista, which was fine with her. She was happy just to be off her horse and in a safe place. The tension melted away from her. The hot bread and the fresh brewed beer were wonderful. She was comfortable for the first time in days and reveled in the camaraderie of the bakery. She drank pints of beer until she lost track of the number. Outside, night fell and the rain continued. They lit candles, giving the room an even friendlier charm.
Where are you from?
Although it had been asked 3 times, this was the first instance that Arista had realized it was meant for her. Turning, she found Arbor, the baker's wife, sitting beside her. She was a petite woman with a plain face and short-cropped hair.
I'm sorry, I'm not accustomed to beer. My husband and I live in Colmora. Well, actually, we're staying with my brother now because we were evicted from our home in Wyndham Village by the Northern Imperial Army. That's up in Warwick, you know. Wyndham Village, I mean, not the army. Of course, it could be. The army, I mean, this time, not the village, because they could be there. Does that answer your question?
The room was spinning slowly, and it gave Arista the feeling she was falling, though she knew she was sitting still. The whole sensation made it difficult for her to concentrate. Arbor looked stricken.
You were evicted? How awful!
Well, yes, but it's not that great of a hardship, really. My brother has a very nice place in the Hill District in Colnora. He's quite well off, you know.
Oh, really? You come from a wealthy family? I thought you did. I was admiring your dress. It's very beautiful.
This?
Arista pulled at the material of her skirt.
I caught this old rag from one of my servants who was about to throw it out. You should see my gowns. Now those are something. But yes, we're very wealthy. My brother has a virtual army of servants.
Irma?
What does your brother do?
Do? Oh, he doesn't do anything.
It doesn't work.
Irma, dear?
My brother? Oh, he calls it work, but it's nothing like what you people do. Did you know I slept on the ground just 2 nights ago? Not indoors either, but out in the woods. Oh, my brother never did that, I can tell you. You probably have, haven't you? But he hasn't. No, he gets his money from taxes. Well, that's how all kings get their money. Well, some can get it from conquest. Glenmorgan got loads from conquest, but not Ulrich. He's never been to war. Until now, of course, and he's not doing well at all, I can tell you.
Irma!
Arista looked up to see Royce standing over her, his face stern.
Why are you calling me that?
I think my wife has had a little too much to drink.
Arista looked around to see several faces smirking in an effort to suppress laughter.
Is there anywhere I can take her to sleep it off?
Dunstan clapped Royce on the shoulder.
Spend the night here. It's raining out. Do you really want to wander around out there in the dark? You can actually make a fine bed out of the flour sacks in the storeroom.
How would you know that, Dan? The wife's kicked you out a few times.
Howdy, you, my friend, can sleep in the rain.
Come along, wife.
Royce pulled Arista to her feet.
Oh, right. Sorry. Forgot who I was.
Armagil winked at the princess.
Don't apologize, honey. That's why we're drinking in the first place. You just got there quicker than the rest of us is all.
The next morning, Arista woke up alone and could not decide which hurt more, her head from the drink or her back from the lumpy flour bags. Her mouth was dry, her tongue coated in some disgusting film. She was pleased to discover her saddlebags beside her. She pulled them open and grimaced. Everything inside smelled of horse sweat and mildew. She had brought only 3 dresses, the one worn through the rain, which was a wrinkled mess, the stunning silver receiving gown she planned to wear when she met Deegan Gaunt, and the one she presently wore. Surprisingly, the silver gown was holding up remarkably well and was barely even wrinkled. She had brought it hoping to impress Gaunt, but recalling her conversation with Royce about how the nationalist leader felt about royalty, she realized it was a poor choice. She would have been much better off with something simpler. It would at least have given her something decent to change into. She pulled off her dirt-stained garment, removed her corset, and pulled on the dress she had worn at Sheridan. She stepped out of the storeroom and found Arbor hard at work, kneading dough, surrounded by dozens of cloth-covered baskets. Villagers entered and either set a bag of flour or a sackcloth of dough on the counter, along with a few copper coins.
When can I pick it up, love?
Come by round noon, Hester, dear.
You do this every day.
Aye.
Sweat glistened on Arbor's brow as she used the huge wooden paddle to slide another loaf into the glowing oven.
Normally Dunn is more helpful, but he's off with your husband and Hattie this morning. It's a rare thing, so I'm happy to let him enjoy the visit. They're down at the smithy if you're interested. Or would you rather have a bite to eat?
Arista's stomach twisted.
Oh, no, thank you. I think I'll wait a bit longer.
Suit yourself.
Arbor worked with a skilled hand born of hundreds, perhaps thousands, of repetitions. Arista knew the baker's wife got up every morning and repeated the same actions as the day before.
How does she do it?
She was certain Arbor could not read and probably had few possessions, yet she seemed happy. While not terribly exciting, it was nonetheless a safe, comfortable life, and Arista felt a twinge of envy.
What's it like to be wealthy?
Well, actually, it makes life easier, but perhaps not as rewarding.
But you travel and can see the world. Your clothing is so fine, and you ride horses. I bet you've even ridden in a carriage, haven't you?
Yes, I've certainly ridden in a carriage.
and been to balls and castles where musicians played and the ladies dressed in embroidered gowns of velvet?
Or silk, actually.
Silk? Well, I've heard of that, but never seen it. What's it like?
Well, I can show you.
Arista went back into the storeroom and returned with the silver gown. Arbor's eyes grew wide.
I've never seen anything so beautiful. It's like...
Arista waited, but Arbor never found her words.
May I touch it?
Arista hesitated, looking first at Arbor, then at the dress.
That's okay.
Arbor looked at her hands.
I would ruin it.
No, I wasn't thinking that at all.
Arista looked down at the dress in her arms once more.
What I was thinking was it was stupid for me to have brought this. I don't think I'll have a chance to wear it, and it's taking up so much space in my pack. I was wondering, would you like to have it?
Arbor looked like she was going to faint. She shook her head adamantly, her eyes wide as if with terror.
No, I couldn't.
Why not? We're about the same size. I think you'd look beautiful in it.
Arbor covered her face with her hands, leaving flour on the tip of her nose.
Oh, I'd be a sight, wouldn't I? Walking up and down hitting door in that. It's awfully nice of you. But I don't go to grand balls or ride in carriages.
Maybe one day you will, and then you'll be happy you have it. In the meantime, if you ever have a bad day, you can put it on and perhaps it'll make you feel better.
There were tears in Arbor's eyes.
Take it, really. You'd be doing me a favor. I do need the space.
Arista held out the dress. Arbor wiped her hands on her apron before taking the dress in her quivering arms, cradling it as if it were a child.
I promise to keep it safe for you. Come back and pick it up anytime, all right?
Of course. Oh, and one more thing.
Arista handed her the corset.
If you would be so kind, I never wish to see this thing again.
Arbor carefully laid the dress down and put her arms around Arista, hugging her close.
Thank you.
When Arista stepped out of the bakery into the sleepy village, her head throbbed, jolted by the brilliant sunlight. She shaded her eyes and spotted Armagil working in front of her shop, stoking logs under her massive cooker.
Morning, Irma! You're looking a mite pale, lassie.
It's your fault.
I try my best, I do indeed.
Arista shuffled over.
Can you direct me to the well?
Up the road 4 houses. You'll find it in front of the smithy.
Thank you.
Following the unmistakable clanging of a metal hammer, Arista found Royce and Hadrian under the sun canopy in the smithy's yard, watching another man beating a bit of molten metal on an anvil. He was muscular and completely bald-headed, with a bushy brown mustache. If he had been in the bakery the previous night, Arista did not remember. Beside him was a barrel of water, and not far away was the well, a full bucket resting on its edge. The bald man dropped the hot metal into his barrel.
Your father taught me that. He was a fine smith, the finest.
Hadrian nodded.
Choke the hammer after stroke, grip it high when drilling die.
I learned that one too. Mr. Blackwater was always making up rhymes.
So this is where you were born?
Arista dipped a community cup into the bucket of water and took a seat on the bench beside the well.
Not exactly. I lived and worked here. I was actually born across the street there at Gertie and Abelard's home.
He pointed at a tiny wattle and daub hovel without even a chimney.
Gertie was the midwife back then. My father kept pestering her so much that she took Mom to her house, and Da had to wait outside in the rain during a terrible thunderstorm. Or so I was told.
Hadrian motioned to the smith.
This is Grimbald. He apprenticed with my father after I left. Does a good job, too.
Royce nodded.
You inherited the smithy from Danbury?
No, Lord Baldwin owns the smithy. Danbury rented from him just as I do. I pay 10 pieces of silver a year, and in return for charcoal, I do work for the manor at no cost.
What about personal belongings? What became of Danbury's things?
Grimbald raised a suspicious eyebrow.
He left me his tools. And if you're after them, you'll have to fight me before the steward and the manor court.
Hadrian raised his hands.
No, I'm not here after anything. His tools are in good hands.
Grimbald relaxed a bit.
Okay, good then. I do have something for you, though. When Dunbury died, he made a list of all his things and who they should go to. Almost everyone in the village got a little something. I didn't even know the man could write until I saw him scribbling it. There was a letter and instructions to give to his son if he ever returned. I read it, but it didn't make much sense. I kept it, though.
Grimbald set down his hammer and ducked inside the shop, then emerged a few minutes later with the letter. Hadrian took the folded parchment and, without opening it, stuffed the note into his shirt pocket and walked away.
What's going on, Royce? He didn't even read it.
He's in one of his moods. He'll mope for a while, maybe get drunk. He'll be fine tomorrow.
But why?
Royce shrugged.
Just the way he is lately. It's nothing, really.
Arista watched Hadrian disappear around the side of the candlemaker's shop. Picking up the hem of her dress, she chased after him. When she rounded the corner, she found him seated on a fence rail, his head in his hands. He glanced up. Biting her lip, she hesitated, then walked over and sat beside him.
Are you all right?
He nodded in reply, but said nothing. They sat in silence for a while.
I used to hate this village.
His eyes searched the side of the shop.
It was always so small.
He lowered his head again. She pretended to straighten her skirt, wondering if it would be better if she left.
The last time I saw my father, we had a terrible fight.
What about?
I wanted to join Lord Baldwin's men-at-arms. I wanted to be a soldier. And he wanted me to be a blacksmith.
Hadrian scuffed the dirt with his boot.
I wanted to see the world, have adventures, be a hero. He wanted to chain me to that anvil. And I couldn't understand that. I was good with his sword. He saw to that. He trained me every day. When I couldn't lift the sword anymore, he just made me switch arms. Why did he do that if he wanted me to be a smith?
A vision swept back to her of two faces in Avimpartha. The heir she had not recognized. But Hadrian's face had been unmistakable as the guardian.
When I told him of my plans to leave, he was furious. He said he didn't train me to gain fame or money, that my skills were meant for greater things, but he wouldn't say what they were. The night I left, we had words, lots of them and none good. I called him a fool. I might even have said he was a coward. I don't remember. I was 15. I ran away and did just what he didn't want me to do. I was going to show him, prove the old man wrong. Only he wasn't. It's taken me this long to figure that out. Now, it's too late.
You never came back.
Hadrian shook his head.
By the time I returned from Calais, I heard he died. I didn't see any point in returning.
He pulled the letter out.
Now there's this.
The parchment shook in his fingers.
Don't you want to know what it says?
I'm afraid to find out.
He continued to stare at the letter as if it were a living thing. She placed a hand on his arm and gave a soft squeeze. She didn't know what else to do. She felt useless. Women were supposed to be comforting, consoling, nurturing. But she did not know how. She felt awful for him, and her inability to do anything to help just made her feel worse. Hadrian stood up. With a deep breath, he opened the letter and began reading. Arista waited. He lowered his hand slowly, holding the letter at his side.
What does it say?
Hadrian held out the letter, letting it slip from his fingers. Before she could take it, the parchment drifted to the ground at her feet. As she bent to pick it up, Hadrian walked away. Arista rejoined Royce at the well.
What was in the letter?
She held it out to Royce, who read it.
What was his reaction?
Not good. He walked off. I think he wants to be alone. You never told him, did you?
Royce continued to study the letter.
I can't believe you never told him. I mean, I know Ezra Hardin told us not to, but I guess I just expected that you would anyway.
I don't trust that wizard. I don't want me or Hadrian wrapped up in his little schemes. I couldn't care less who the guardian is, or the heir for that matter. Maybe it was a mistake coming here.
You came here on purpose? You mean this had nothing to do with... You came here for proof, didn't you?
I wanted something to confirm Ezra Harden's claim. I really didn't expect to find anything.
He just told me his father trained him night and day in sword fighting and said his skills were for greater things. Sounds like proof to me. You know, you would have discovered that if you had just talked to him. He deserves the truth, and when he gets back, one of us needs to tell him.
Royce nodded, carefully refolding the letter.
I'll talk to him.
The oak clenched the earth with a massive hand of gnarled roots unchanged by time. In the village, houses were lost to fires. New homes were built to accommodate growing families, and barns were raised on once vacant land. But on this hill, time stood as still as the depths of Gutaria prison. Standing beneath the tree's leaves, Hadrian felt young again. Here, at this tree, Hattie had first kissed Arbor, the shoemaker's daughter. He and Dunstan had been competing for years for her favor, but Hattie kissed her first. That had been what started the fight. When Dunstan found out about Arbor, he had charged at Hattie, who instinctually sidestepped and threw him to the ground. Misfortune landed Dunn's head on a field stone. He had lain unconscious with blood running from his nose and ears. Horrified, Hattie had carried him back to the village, convinced he had just killed his best friend. Dunn recovered, but Hattie never would. He never spoke to Arbor again. 3 days later, the boy known as Hattie had left for good. Adrian slumped to the ground and sat in the shade of the tree with his back to the old oak's trunk. When he had been a boy, this had been where he had always come to think. From here, he could see the whole village below and the hills beyond. Hills that had called to him, and a horizon that had whispered of adventure and glory. Royce and Arista would be wondering where he had gone. Hadrian was not usually self-indulgent on the job.
The job?
He unconsciously shook his head. This was Royce's job, not his. He had kept his part of the bargain, and all that remained was for Arista to reach the rendezvous. When she did, that would end the assignment and his career in the world of intrigue. Strange how the end brought him back to the beginning. Near the center of the village, he could see the smithy, which was easy to pick out by its rising black smoke. He had worked those bellows for hours each day. Hadrian remembered the sound of the anvil and the ache in his arms. That had been a time when all he had known of the world had stopped at this tree, and Hadrian could not help wondering how different his life might have been if he had stayed.
Would I have married Arbor? Had children of my own? A stout, strong son who would complain about working the bellows and come to this tree and kiss his first girl. If I'd stayed at this very moment, would I be sitting here thinking of my happy family below? Would Da have died in peace?
One thing was certain, he would have more calluses and less blood on his hands. Regret was a curse without a cure, except to forget. He closed his eyes. He did not want to think. He fell asleep to the sound of songbirds and woke to the thunder of horses' hooves. As night approached, Royce became worried. Once more, they enjoyed the hospitality of the bakers. Arbor was making a dinner of pottage, while Dunstan ran a delivery of loaves to the manor. Arista offered assistance, but appeared more a hindrance than a help. Arbor did not seem to mind. The two were inside, while Royce stood outside, watching the road with an uneasy feeling. The village felt different to him. The evening had an edge, a tension to the air. He felt a nervous energy in the trees and an apprehension rising from the earth and rock. Before Avamparthe, he had considered it intuition, but now he wondered. Elves drew power from nature. They understood the river's voice and the chatter of the leaves.
Did that pass to me?
He stood motionless, his eyes panning the road, the shops, the houses, and the dark places between. He was hoping to spot Hadrian returning, but felt something else. Royce focused on the street. The sun had set, and the twilight haze had begun to mask the village. He was looking at the candlemaker's shop when he spotted movement by the livery. When he looked closer, nothing was there. It could have been Hobby coming to check the animals, but the fact that the image had vanished so quickly made him think otherwise. Royce slipped into the shadows behind Armagil's brew shop and crept toward the livery. He entered from the rear, climbing to the loft. A fresh pile of hay cushioned his movements and muted his approach. In the dark, he could clearly see the back of a figure standing by the doorway, peering at the street. Royce leaned to his ear.
Move and die.
The man froze.
Duster?
Royce turned the man to face him.
Etcher? What are you doing here?
The meeting has been set. I've been sent to fetch you.
That was fast.
We got word back this morning, and I rode hard to get here. The meeting is set for tonight at the ruins of Amberton Lee. We need to get going if we're going to make it in time.
We can't leave right now. Adrian is missing.
We can't wait. Gaunt's people are suspicious. They think it could be an Imperial trap. They'll back off if we don't stick to the plan. We need to leave now, or the opportunity will pass.
Royce silently cursed himself. It was his own fault for not having chased after Hadrian that afternoon. He almost had. Now there was no telling where he was. Etcher was right. The mission had to come first. He would leave word for Hadrian with the bakers and get the princess to her meeting with Gaunt. The moist, steamy smell of boiling cabbage and wood smoke filled the bakery. Arbor was stirring the pot while Arista set the table. Both looked up, startled, at Royce and Etcher in the doorway.
Hadrian hasn't shown?
No.
We need to get going.
Now? But what about Hadrian?
You'll have to catch up. Get your things.
Arista hesitated only a moment and then crossed to the flower storage to gather her bags.
Can't you even stay for dinner? It's almost ready.
We need to get moving. We have...
Royce stopped as he heard the approach of a horse and cart being driven fast down the road. It stopped just out front. Dunstan came through the door a moment later.
Hadrian's been arrested.
He pointed at Royce and Arista.
The steward ordered your arrests as well.
Their arrests? But why?
The bailiff was wrong. Looks like Lurid has more influence than he thought. Let's get the horses.
His lordship's soldiers were just behind me as I started down the hill. They will be here in minutes.
Etcher looked to Royce.
My horse is down by the river. It can carry two.
Royce was thinking quickly, calculating risks and outcomes.
You take her to the rendezvous on your horse, then. I'll see what I can do to help Adrian. With any luck, we'll catch up to you. If we don't, it shouldn't matter.
He looked at Arista.
From what I've heard of your contact, he will see you to safety, even if he ultimately declines your offer.
Don't worry about me.
The princess rushed toward the door with her bags.
I'll be fine. Just make sure that Hadrian is okay.
Taking a bag and the princess's hand, Etcher pulled her out into the night and dodged into the shadows of the buildings. Royce followed them out, caught hold of the eaves, and climbed up onto the baker's shake roof, where he crouched in the shadow of the chimney, listening. He watched about half a dozen men with torches moving fast down the main street from the direction of the manor. They stopped first at the livery, then went to the baker's.
Where are the strangers that rode in with the old blacksmith's son?
Oh, they left hours ago.
Their horses are still in the livery. We saw you race from the manor to warn them. Now where are they?
Leave him alone! They ran out when they heard you coming. We don't know where. They didn't tell us anything.
If you're lying, you'll be arrested for treason and hanged. Do you understand? Plan out in pairs. You two cover the bridge. You and you search the fields. And you two start going door to door. Until further notice, all citizens of Hintendar are to remain in their homes. Arrest anyone outside. Now, move!
The men, marked conveniently by their flaming torches, scattered in all directions, leaving Royce to watch them scurrying about. He glanced across the dark fields. Etcher would have no trouble avoiding the foot search. Once they reached his horse, they would be gone. Arista was safely on her way, his job done. All he had to worry about now was Hadrian. The Rhaera Revelations, Book 3, Nephron Rising, Part 1, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2009 Michael J. Sullivan. All rights reserved. Recorded with permission of the author. Production copyright 2020 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Bradley Smith. Starring Laura C. Harris as Arista, Chris Gennebach as Hadrian, Jonathan Foyer as Royce, Dwayne Washington as Amelia, and Terrence Aselford as Arcadius. With Nusha Nawab, Kimberly Gilbert, Bradley Smith, Jeff Allen, Andy Brownstein, Marnie Penning, Henry Kramer, Nick DePento, Scott McCormick, Christopher Graybill, Nora Ashrati, Mort Shelby, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Dylan Lynch, Yasmin Toison, Drew Kopas, Elliot Dash, Chris Davenport, Jonathan Church, Jonathan David Martin, Lawrence Redmond, Richard Rowan, Sasha Olenek, Andy Clemens, Ken Jackson, Patrick Bussink, Jefferson A. Russell, Nanette Savard, Matthew Polly, Matthew Bassett, Chris Stinson, James Lewis, Jacob Yeh, Colleen Delaney, Carolyn Kashner, Michael John Casey, Jonathan Watkins, Kenyatta Rogers, Ren Casey, Scott Bruffy, Faith Potts, and Frank Britton. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Bradley Foster Smith. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Karen Fakey. Produced by Rick Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producer, Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Nephron Rising, be sure to look for our productions of Michael J. Sullivan's epic fantasy prequels, Legends of the First Empire, as well as the upcoming Rhaera Revelations 4, The Emerald Storm, along with our entire catalog of existing releases at www.graphicaudio.net.
Graphic Audio presents Michael J. Sullivan's Legends of the First Empire, Book 1, The Age of Myth. Since time immemorial, humans have worshipped the gods they call the Frey, truly a race apart. Some invincible in battle, some masters of magic.
Nepomim Helgavri!
And all seemingly ageless and immortal. But when a god falls to a human blade, the balance of power between humans and those they thought were gods changes forever. Now, only a few stand between humankind and annihilation. Wraith, reluctant to embrace his destiny as the god-killer.
If I cut off his head, will he stay down longer?
He's not getting up. You killed him.
That's a god. Gods don't die. They're immortal.
Really, not so much.
Suri, a young seer, burdened by signs of impending doom.
I've done a reading from bones. Several now. The thing that murdered that man out there isn't a bear at all. It's a powerful demon. If I can learn the demon through nature, then I'll be prepared. The demon is coming at the light of the full moon, but I don't know exactly what kind of demon we're talking about.
And Persephone, who must overcome personal tragedy to lead her people.
Clan Wren, defend your home!
The Age of Myth gives way to a time of rebellion. Don't miss Legends of the First Empire, Book 1, The Age of Myth, now in graphic audio.
Thanks for listening to this Graphic Audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. For those of you who are new to Graphic Audio, check out our Graphic Audio Streams subscription service, where you can choose from four different genres. Each plan features two Graphic Audio titles per month to listen to through our Graphic Audio Access app. At the beginning of every month, the previous featured titles will be automatically removed and replaced by the new featured titles. It's an economical way to check out and sample titles from our various series in Graphic Audio, starting at only $4.99 per month. And be sure to listen to our newly reformatted Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can get GASP in the free Graphic Audio Access app or subscribe to GASP through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.